Jung had a very important insight that is helpful at this point in dealing with the problem that we've been describing. Jung's insight is that the unconscious has a compensatory relationship to consciousness or to the ego. The unconscious has a compensatory relationship to the ego. The ego, for Jung, is basically what is psychically constituted by my self-understanding. Who I am, what I can do, why I'm doing it. My ego is put together by that self-understanding, my ego. This is who I am, this is what I can do, and this is why I'm doing it. The unconscious has a compensatory relationship to the ego. That is to say, it compensates for the deficiencies in the ego's understanding of itself. It compensates for those deficiencies by releasing images that reveal another side of the story, the darker side of the story. Who knows what evil lurks in hearts of men? The shadow knows. The shadow is one of the elements of the unconscious. It's released through the spontaneous imagery of the psyche in such events as dreams, spontaneous fantasies, active imagination. I'm going to talk about these in more detail. Dream, spontaneous fantasy, active imagination. Daydreams, provided that they're allowed simply to go forward without intervention by the ego. Daydreams can be every bit as revealing as night dreams, but there's a danger with daydreams, that is to say, the ego can intervene and stop them. And it's relatively powerless to do that in night dreams. Relatively powerless. But that, those kinds of things, you wake up in the morning and there's a song on your mind right away. Start paying attention to what the words of the song are. You might be telling us something. You wake up in the morning day after day after day and the song, "There Goes My Reason for Living," is on my mind. Something is trying to get through. Something's trying to get through. Okay? So there's that sort of thing. Okay. The compensatory function of the unconscious with respect to the ego's self-understanding. The unconscious compensates for the partializing that the ego has done. It releases other imaginative material that is needed for correct self-understanding. Now, Freud and Jung both trusted the dream more than they did any other manifestation of the unconscious. By the way, a lot of what Freud and Jung meant with the term the unconscious is also meant in the term empirical consciousness in Lonergan's framework. A lot of what they meant by the unconscious, not completely, as we see in Jung's notion of the collective unconscious, but still, a lot of what they meant by the unconscious is the same thing as what Lonergan means by empirical consciousness, that level, that stream of sensitive consciousness that goes forward sometimes without our paying very much attention to it. So one of the manifestation of the unconscious that Freud and Jung both trusted more than they did any other was the dream. And the reason was that the repressive censorship is relatively relaxed in sleep. If it weren't, you wouldn't be able to get to sleep. It's relaxed. It's not trying to enforce its wishes, its ambitions. It gives up for a while, and it lets down, and it lets into consciousness images that are blocked out by the constant rush of daily activities and duties, responsibilities, and so on and so forth. Now, that isn't to say that Freud and Jung had the same notion of the dream. They didn't. Freud is much more pessimistic about our situation, because Freud saw that the censorship in the dream can still be only partially relaxed, and it might still be at work. And so even the dream can be a lie. Freud is a real pessimist with regard to human nature and its truthfulness. Ernest Becker comments about a statement that Freud made, that most of the men that he had ever met were morally obtuse. And then Becker says, of course, we know who one of the exceptions to that was, namely Freud himself. But he is very pessimistic about our capacities to recognize the truth. That even the dream may be a lie, because maybe the censorship is only partially relaxed in sleep. Jung said, and basically my tendency is to agree with him on this, but I'd introduce some qualifications. Jung said the dream releases empirical consciousness as it is. And the lie comes in the way that I deal with what the dream releases. But the dream releases images as they are. It shows psychic organizations. It shows complexes as they are at the present time. It doesn't cover them over. It may be showing, the dream may be showing, that in my waking life I'm running away from the truth. But the dream is showing that truthfully. The dream is a truthful manifestation of the untruth of the ego. Okay? You see what I'm saying? The dream can truthfully reflect that the ego is being untrue, that the ego is neglecting something. In a dream, I may be resisting. So when you appear in a dream, that's the ego. And you may be resisting something or someone that is attempting to make its presence felt. Well, that could easily be a manifestation, you would say, that what you are doing is not facing something that perhaps is there to be faced. They mean that. The lie, then, for Jung is not in the dream, but in what I do with the dream. The way I remember it. Do I take in all its details? Or do I repress some of those details? The way I interpret it. Do I raise all the relative questions? That's where the lie would come in for Jung. Not in the dream itself. The dream is a spontaneous manifestation of my psychic organization as it is right now. And that is compensating for what I might not be willing to acknowledge in my waking state, in my waking life.
I heard a story the other day about in the course of Jung and Freud sharing a dream, Jung broke from Freud at the point where Freud refused to share a dream.
That's part of what contributed to the break, yes. Part of it.
Because it would have revealed something about Freud.
And that fact in their relationship reveals something about their relationship. Freud regarded himself as the superior figure, and he was 20 years older. And regarded himself as the one with the, and Jung was his disciple. And for him to reveal his own psyche to a person whom he regarded as his disciple, he told Jung, he said, if I told you that dream, I would lose my authority. And Jung said he lost it right then. right at that point. There were many things that led to their breakdown, but that was certainly one. catalytic factors in the relationship. So, for Jung, the dream gives the psychic organization, it shows the complexes as they are. And the question is, do I want insight and truth enough that I will remember all the details of the dream? And that I will raise all the relevant questions about those in attempting to interpret the dream. No matter what the price may be for the truth that comes. Okay, I just want to talk a little bit more about that, and then I'll give you one other indication of what the importance of psychic conversion is, and then I will go into the whole matter of dreams and dealing with images and so on. Psychic conversion in its rudimentary form, then, is the shift from resistance to willingness at the level of the censorship. The shift from resistance to willingness at the level of the censorship. My own experience has convinced me that one of the primary instruments of psychic conversion as an ongoing process is the negotiation of dreams. That's my own experience over the last 8 years has convinced me that one of the instruments of the ongoing process of psychic conversion lies in the negotiation of dreams. However, there has to be something that has happened before I become willing to negotiate dreams. And what's that? That would be the beginning point of psychic conversion. Well, frequently it's the build-up of inauthentic interpretation has led to a breaking point. Something has gotten to give because I can't go on this way anymore. I am living out of a certain self-image and self-understanding that is leading to my making decisions that are destroying. And I can't go on this way any longer. I've reached the end of my rope. There must be some source of energy that I can tap that is also a source of truth and guidance. And I think that kind of breakdown of the ego is really where the process of psychic conversion can begin in the first place. Again, these things vary from individual to individual. But certainly one of the things that leads to the beginning of the process of psychic conversion is the realization, I haven't got it any longer. I just can't go on with this self-image and this self-understanding. I can't even act out of it any longer. The energy is no longer there. And it's leading me more and more into fatigue, depression, anger, taking on too many responsibilities, not being able to put limits on my actions, and so on and so forth. In other words, the point where a person comes to recognize that he or she is engaged in a self-destructive pattern that might be leading closer and closer, for instance, to a nervous breakdown, can frequently be the beginning of psychic conversion. What is going on? What is going on? Something's got to give, and that feeling frequently comes in this way, namely, there has to be something deeper. There has to be a deeper source of energy and a deeper truth. And there's a faint suspicion that, yeah, in fact there is, but I want to know how to get in touch with it. That deeper source of energy and that deeper source of truth. And that's going to really obliterate the ego's self-understanding. Not the ego itself, but the ego's present self-understanding is going to have to be changed, and there's going to be a lot of suffering involved. But I'll take the risk of that suffering because this is certainly leading nowhere. I can't lose by trying something. And then it's at that point that the person might be willing to begin to listen to a deeper dimension of himself or herself. Might be willing to let down the resistance to the images that are welling up because the ones that you're working with are just running you out of steam in some way or another. one of the ways in which Jung described this, and it's not completely adequate, but it's helpful, is in terms of the functions of the ego, the functions of the personality. That I learn, for Jung there are four functions: thinking, feeling, sensation, and intuition. And I have learned to operate from the thinking function. That is the way in which I make my way in the world. And I've learned this from very early on in life. And it's been encouraged in me by my parents and so on and so forth. I've got a good mind, I've got a good head, and it's gotten me a long way. I know how to use my mind to negotiate the real world. But in the process of relying on the thinking function, I have repressed the feeling function. I don't mediate the world through feeling. And my feeling, in fact, is extremely undifferentiated and chaotic. My mind is clear, my feeling is a mess. Okay? People, you know, that who feel, you know, my mind is 5 years ahead of my feelings. This could easily be one of the ways in which the whole process of psychic conversion could begin. It's not certainly not the only way. But it could easily be one way. My mind is 5 years ahead of my feelings. It's as clear as a bell. And this is a mess. Just a bloody mess. I've got to stop and begin to give credence and respect. I've got to learn how to relate to the world through the feeling process. And in fact, there's a whole bunch of energy that is tied up in the feeling function, but it's a mess. But as I begin to start paying attention to it, it gets differentiated and clarified. But it's affective clarification, not intellectual clarification. Affective clarification. Or again, it could be sensation and intuition. People use one of those four as the way in which they mediate the world. And if it's thinking, then feeling is going to be the repressed one. If it's feeling, thinking is going to be repressed. If it's sensation, intuition will be repressed, and vice versa. And the whole thing for Jung is to get all four of them working together in an integral fashion. But however you want to come at this, you get the, when you get the sense that the track that you've been going on is coming to an end, and all of a sudden it's a dead end, and you're beginning to feel we're going to be at that dead end pretty soon, unless there is another, unless there's a switch that I can take in one direction or the other. That's the kind of experience that frequently can initiate the process that I'm referring to as the process of psychic conversion.
Could you say just a little bit more about the sensation of intuition?
Yeah. Yeah. If two people are going to a party together, just to give an example of what this would be, two people are going to a party together. One of them is sensation and the other one is intuition, is intuitive, in terms of the way in which they organize their experience. Before they've gotten to the party, unbeknownst to them, there's been a fight at the party. And the fight is over now, but the tension is still in the air. Okay? They walk into the room, the intuitive picks it up immediately. Something is wrong, you see. The intuitive picks up unseen relationships. Invisible relationships. It picks up psychic reverberations and vibrations. Not so much what you see and so on, but it's just, it's in the air. You walk in the door right away and you know that the atmosphere is tense. That's the intuitive type. Okay. The sensate type doesn't have a clue as to that. What are you talking about? But the sensate type has the organization of the furniture, the layout of the room, where the booze is, where the bathroom is, just as quickly as the intuitive has sized up the unseen relationships. In the meantime, the intuitive is so preoccupied with the unseen relationships that he or she is tripping over the rug. They're two different ways of organizing experience. That's what Jung would mean by the strong sensate, where you use sensation as your way of organizing experience. I had a friend once, of whom it was said, by somebody else, the minute he walks in the room, you think he wants to reorganize the furniture. In other words, he was a Sufi 8, strong personality to begin with, and very much latched on to just exactly where things are, in the world of space and time. Intuitive is lost in the world of space and time. Basically lost in the world of space and time. My good friend Sebastian Moore should not be left driving a car by himself. I don't care if it's a city that he's been in for 10 years. And he's done it. In Milwaukee. He was out visiting a home in Wauwatosa in Milwaukee one evening, and to drive back down to Marquette University, all of a sudden he found himself on the road to Beloit, which is going in the other direction. And he's out there, and how do I get out of this place? And yet, he is one of the keenest minds that I've ever run across in terms of picking up what's the psychic atmosphere of a group. I mean, he can articulate, he can walk into a room and articulate the psychic atmosphere of a group more clearly than probably anybody that I've ever come into. But in space and time, he's gone. He's just absolutely gone. Okay. So that's how the sensation and intuitive is different from one another. Whereas the sensate is extremely practical and in dealing with things in space and time, but needs to be complemented by the intuitive in order to read some of the psychic situations that might be present in the group. Now, if you get these two to work together, they're fine, because they complement each other, or they compensate for each other's deficiencies. Okay. At any rate, as I was saying, one of the propelling experiences for the process of psychic conversion is the experience that I got to learn to tap elements of my being that I haven't tapped up to this time. I have to learn to relate to the world in other ways, using other capacities, quite different and maybe opposite capacities from the ones that I've been using up to this time. Jung was correct that at least in our culture, that sort of experience frequently hits people at midlife. And the whole thing of the midlife crisis is no thing that psychologists are making up in order to make money for themselves. It's a reality. They'll believe me, just wait. It's a reality. You run out of steam according to the patterns that you've been used to operating on. And you get to the point, and it frequently happens to people between 35 and 45, you get to the point where I've got to learn a new way of relating to and mediating reality out of a whole other set of capacities where there's a lot of energy stored up, but I don't know how to get in touch with it. And I don't have the energy left any longer to go along on that track. And that doesn't mean that I then all of a sudden start repudiating thinking, for instance. It doesn't mean that. It means I integrate what is already well differentiated with what is undifferentiated and achieve a wholeness and a balance of the functions. So, okay. Now, the dream